EBFN Radio is written and produced by Eric Belgum.
This is Jim Sklavounis of Grinder Man, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, Accra.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
In LA, some restriction applied.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11. Some restrictions
apply. Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Pat of Catskill, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Here's a PSA from Columbia County Sanctuary Movement about what to do if you encounter ICE. In our community, knowledge is power, so let's talk about your rights. You don't have to open the door, and you have the right to stay silent. Not sign anything, and in New York, you can record an interaction with law enforcement. If an agent comes with a warrant, it must be signed by a judge to be valid. In public, make sure to stay calm, don't run, and never lie or show false documents. If you're detained, you don't have to sign anything without a lawyer. ICE can use your words against you. So stay silent and ask for legal help. To stay informed, visit our social media account at CCSMNY, and if you are interested in learning more about your rights, call Columbia County Sanctuary Movement at 518-303-3848, Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5 p.m. And if you're approached by ICE agents or see them in the community, call CCSM's Rapid Response Line at 518-291-9386.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, December 26th. Local early morning temperatures range from 6 degrees in Tannersville to 13 in Kinderhook. Regional average soil temperature is 35 degrees. The area is under a winter storm warning. I hope everyone is planning to hunker down overnight. Today is looking chilly with a high of 22 at 4 p.m. A little before that, around 2 p.m., snow returns to the area. After sunset, snowfall should rapidly increase, dropping a half foot overnight. Travel is not recommended. Temperatures bottom out at 20 degrees. Tomorrow, the snow tapers off by 10 a.m. and we see a high temperature of 30 degrees at 3 p.m. That is close enough to the thaw point to be cautious of surface ice Saturday night as temperatures drop to a pipe freezing 9 degrees. Sunday is looking dry and cloudy with a high of 32 at 3 p.m. Monday is looking pretty rainy with a high of 41. Sunset today will be at 4:15 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:18 a.m. Looking way up, we see plasma winds will be average at 507 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently pretty good with a level 1 noise floor. There are no chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 113. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. And if this message finds you while you're inside nice and cozy this evening, maybe head on over to WGXE.org, give some local stuff a listen, and while you're there, consider hitting that donate button. And if you're outside in the mess of things, well, we're here for you, and thank you for keeping the world turning.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections.
Bethel Bethany United Church of Christ in Milwaukee recently lowered its electric bills and reduced its climate warming pollution by switching to energy-efficient LED lights. Nearby, the Sherman Park Grocery Store installed a 50-gallon rain barrel to capture stormwater running off the roof.
We have seen how people are really interested in reducing flooding, in reducing stormwater on their property.
That's Ifeoluwapu Tolurunju of the Sherman Park Community Association, which supported these projects through its Greening Congregations initiative. The program helps faith groups, small businesses, and apartment buildings in the area implement climate solutions. Some cut carbon pollution, while others reduce stormwater runoff, which is a growing problem as climate change causes more heavy downpours. The group also hires high school students to help, which exposes them to possible environmental careers. And many of the projects are at central locations in the community. For example, churches often host food pantries, schools, and daycares.
Meaning that people go there at least maybe 2 times in a week.
So through these projects, the whole community can see climate solutions in action. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Who is community radio for?
It's for people.
You mean it's for the people?
What's the difference between people and the people?
People you see on the street are people. You can see them. You can't see the people. There's too many to see.
You can't see anything on the radio anyway.
That's what's great about radio. There's nothing to see.
That means you can drive at the same time you listen to the radio.
Do you think it's safe to operate a motor vehicle while listening to WGXC?
Is it safe to use power tools while listening to WGXC?
90.7 FM. WGXC.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM radio for open ears. It's the Friday afternoon show with Simone Stevens. I'm Simone. And usually I have a guest and we sit down and we chat about whatever they have going on. And they're usually local. And it's always, I find it from my side, really interesting to learn all of these amazing things about people that are essentially my neighbors. But it's the holidays and people are busy and it's a little stressful to get that thing together for a live radio interview. And so I am doing a pre-recorded show, and actually I was going to go into the studio today, but the winter storm is approaching earlier than expected, so I decided to pre-record after all. So this is that, and I'm going to share a couple of classic short stories that I had never even read. I did some researching. So what are some great short stories that people like around the holidays? And a couple came up, one by O. Henry and Hans Christian Andersen, a story called The Fir Tree, which is a fairy tale. So the first one by O. Henry, it's called The Gift of the Magi. And most of you out there are probably like, Simone, we know it. I didn't. I hadn't read these ever. So I read it this morning. And I'm going to do a reading of that, but I'm going to treat it as if it's live, meaning if I stumble or, on a word, I'm just going to stop, take a beat, take a breath, and start over from the beginning of the sentence as if it's live. And the first one, The Gift of the Magi, like I said, I read this morning. The Fir Tree, I have never read before. So that will be, I'll treat it like a live recording of a story I've never read before. So your discovery is on par with mine, essentially, happening at the same time as me. So, yeah, I do want to start with a song by Firehorse, which is called You Don't Have to Be Alone. And it's one of my favorites, and this record came out years ago, but it's one that I always come back to. And I was thinking about that new year and how I go right to the, oh, it's a new year. What are my goals? What are my aspirations? What do I want to accomplish in the new year? And I thought, you know, before I go down that rabbit hole, I'm going to take a pause and just reflect on some of the things that happened this year that I was proud of or happy about or excited by, or losses that broke my heart, or wishes that
were partially granted or never fully realized, and kind of honor all of them. I'm going to be a little hippy-dippy here, folks. I am originally from California, so bear with me, my fellow East Coasters. And also just some tunes that I keep coming back to, right? That for some reason, just really still years later, resonate with me in some way. So this first one is by Firehorse. Correction, the song title by Firehorse is If You Don't Want to Be Alone. Here we go.
It was dark when I found you.
And that was If You Don't Want to Be Alone by Firehorse, one of my favorites. I'm going to be playing another one of hers, theirs, in a little bit. So if you're just joining us, WGXE 90.7 ACRA, happy holidays, everyone. I'm Simone, and I'm going to be reading The Gift of the Magi, which is a short story by O. Henry. First time I read it was today. And I got to say, there is a line there that you might go, what? That's not 2025 or even, 1982 or 19... Anyway, keep in mind this was written in, I believe, 1905, right? Or 1902. All right, so, like I said before, I am not going to cut and paste this, even though it's pre-recorded. I'm just going to act like it's live. The Gift of the Magi. $1.87. That was all. And 60 cents of it was in pennies. Pennies saved one and two at a time by bulldozing the grocer and the vegetable man and the butcher until one's cheeks burned with the silent imputation of parsimony that does such close dealings implied. Three times Della counted it, $1.87, and the next day would be Christmas. There was clearly nothing to do but flop down on the shabby little couch and howl. So, Della did it, which instigates the moral reflection that life is made up of sobs, sniffles, and smiles, with sniffles predominating. While the mistress of the home is gradually subsiding from the first stage to the second, take a look at the home. A furnished flat at $8 per week. It did not exactly beggar description, but it certainly had that word on the lookout for the mendicancy squad. In the vestibule below was a letterbox into which no letter would go, and an electric button from which no mortal finger could coax a ring. Also, appertaining thereunto was a card bearing the name Mr. James Dillingham Young. The Dillingham had been flung to the breeze during a former period of prosperity when its possessor was being paid $30 per week. Now, when the income was shrunk to $20, though, they were thinking seriously of contracting to a modest and unassuming D. But whenever Mr. James Dillingham Young came home and reached his flat above, he was called Jim and greatly hugged by Mrs. James Dillingham Young, already introduced to you as Della, which is all very good. Della finished her cry and attended to her cheeks with the powder rag. She stood up by the window and looked out duly at a gray cat walking a gray fence in a gray backyard. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day, and she had only $1.87 with which to buy Jim a present. She had been saving every penny she could for months, with this result. $20 a week doesn't go far. Expenses had been greater than she had calculated. They always are. Only $1.87 to buy a present for Jim. Her Jim. Many a happy hour she had spent planning for something nice for him. Something fine and rare and sterling. Something just a little bit near to being worthy of the honor of being owned by Jim. Okay, there it was. There was a pier glass between the windows of the room. Perhaps you have seen a pier glass in an $8 flat. A very thin and very agile person may, by observing his reflection in a rapid sequence of longitudinal strips, obtain a fairly accurate conception of his looks. Della, being slender, had mastered the art. Suddenly, she whirled from the window and stood before the glass. Her eyes were shining brilliantly, but her face had lost its color within 20 seconds. Rapidly, she pulled down her hair and let it fall to its full length. Now, there were two possessions of the James Dillingham Youngs in which they both took a mighty pride. One was Jim's gold watch that had been his father's and his grandfather's. The other was Della's hair. Had the Queen of Sheba lived in the flat across the air shaft, Della would have let her hair hang out the window, someday to dry, just to depreciate Her Majesty's jewels and gifts. Had King Solomon been the janitor, with all his treasures piled up in the basement, Jim would have pulled out his watch every time he passed just to see him pluck at his beard from envy. So now Della's beautiful hair fell about her rippling and shining like a cascade of brown waters. It reached below her knee and made itself almost a garment for her. And then she did it up again nervously and quickly. Once she faltered for a minute and stood still while a tear or two splashed on the worn red carpet. On went her old brown jacket, on went her old brown hat. With a whirl of skirts and with a brilliant sparkle still in her eyes, she fluttered out the door and down the streets, down the stairs to the street. Where she stopped, the sign read, "Madame Sofroni, hair goods of all kinds." One flight up, Della ran and collected herself, panting. Madame, large, too white, chilly, hardly looked like Sofroni. "Will you buy my hair?" asked Della. "I buy hair," said Madame. "Take your head off and let's have a sight at the looks of it." Down rippled the brown cascade. $20, said Madame, lifting the mass with a practiced hand. "Give it to me quick," said Della. Oh, and the next 2 hours tripped by on rosy wings. Forget the hashed metaphor. She was ransacking the stores for Jim's present. She found it, at last. It surely had been made for Jim and no one else. There was no other like it in any of the stores, and she had turned all of them inside out. It was a platinum fob chain, simple and chaste in design, properly proclaiming its value by substance alone, and not by meretricious ornamentation, as all good things should do. It was even worthy of the watch. As soon as she saw it, she knew that it must be Jim's. It was like him. Quietness and value. The description applied to both. $21 they took from her for it, and she hurried home with the 87 cents. With that chain on his watch, Jim might be properly anxious about the time in any company. Grand as the watch was, he sometimes looked at it on the sly on account of the old leather strap that he used in place of a chain. When Della reached home, her intoxication gave way a little to prudence and reason. She got out her curling irons and lighted the gas and went to work repairing the ravages made by generosity added to love. Which is always a tremendous task, dear friends, a mammoth task. Within 40 minutes, her head was covered with tiny, clothesline curls that made her look wonderfully like a truant schoolboy. She looked at her reflection in the mirror, long, carefully, and critically. "If Jim doesn't kill me," she said to herself, "before he takes a second look at me, he'll say I look like a Coney Island chorus girl. But what could I do? Oh, what could I do with $1.87? At 7 o'clock, the coffee was made and the frying pan was on the back of the stove hot and ready to cook the chops. Jim was never late. Della doubled the fob chain in her hand and sat on the corner of the table near the door that he always entered. Then she heard his step on the stair, away down on the first flight, and she turned white for just a moment. She had a habit of saying a little silent prayer about the simplest everyday things, and now she whispered, "Please, God, make him think I'm still pretty." The door opened, and Jim stepped in and closed it. He looked thin and very serious. Poor fellow, he was only 22, and to be burdened with a family. He needed a new overcoat, and he was without gloves. Jim stopped inside the door, as immovable as a setter at the scent of quail. His eyes were fixed upon Della, and there was an expression in them that she could not read, and it terrified her. It was not anger, nor surprise, nor disapproval, nor horror, nor any of the sentiments that she had been prepared for. He simply stared at her fixedly, with that peculiar expression on his face. Della wriggled off the table and went for him. "Jim, darling," she cried, "don't look at me that way. I had my hair cut off and sold it because I couldn't have lived through Christmas without giving you a present. It'll grow out again. You won't mind, will you? I just had to do it. My hair grows awfully fast. Say Merry Christmas, Jim, and let's be happy. You don't know what a beautiful, nice gift I've got for you."
"You've cut off your hair?"
asked Jim, laboriously, as if he had not been arrived at that patent fact yet, even after the hardest mental labor. "Cut it off and sold it," said Della. "Don't you like me just as well, anyhow? I'm me without my hair, ain't I?" Jim looked about the room curiously.
"You say your hair is gone?"
he said, with an air almost of idiocy. "You needn't look for it," said Della. "It's sold, I tell you, sold and gone, too. It's Christmas Eve, boy. Be good to me, for it went for you. Maybe the hairs of my head were numbered," she went on with sudden, serious sweetness. "But nobody could ever count my love for you. Shall I put the chops on, Jim?" Out of his trance, Jim seemed quickly to wake. He unfolded his Della. For 10 seconds, let us regard with discreet scrutiny some inconsequential object in the other direction. $8 a week or $1 million a year, what is the difference? A mathematician or a wit would give you the wrong answer. The Magi brought valuable gifts, but that was not among them. This dark assertion will be illuminated later on. Jim drew a package from his overcoat pocket and threw it upon the table.
"Don't make any mistake, Dell," he said, "about me. I don't think there's anything in the way of a haircut or a shave or a shampoo that could make my... that could make me like my girl any less. But if you'll unwrap the package, you may see why you had me going a while at first."
White fingers and nimble tore at the string and paper, and then an ecstatic scream of joy, and then, alas, a quick feminine change to hysterical tears and wails, necessitating the immediate employment of all the comforting powers of the Lord of the Flat. For there lay the combs, the set of combs, side and back, that Della had worshipped long in a Broadway window. Beautiful combs, pure tortoiseshell, with jeweled rims, just the shade to wear in the beautiful vanished hair. They were expensive combs, she knew, and her heart had simply craved and yearned over them without the least hope of possession. And now they were hers. But the tresses that should have adorned the coveted adornments were gone. But she hugged them to her bosom, and at length she was able to look up with dim eyes and a smile and say, "My hair grows so fast, Jim." And then Della leapt up like a little singed cat and cried, Oh, Jim had not yet seen his beautiful present. She held it out to him eagerly upon her open palm. The dull, precious metal seemed to flash with a reflection of her bright and ardent spirit. "Isn't it a dandy, Jim? I hunted all over town to find it. You'll have to look at the time 100 times a day now. Give me your watch. I want to see how it looks on it." Instead of obeying, Jim tumbled down on the couch and put his hands under the back of his head and smiled. "Dell," said he, "let's put our Christmas presents away and keep them a while. They're too nice to use just as a present. I sold the watch to get the money to buy your combs. And now suppose you put the chops on. The Magi, as you know, were wise men, wonderfully wise men, who brought gifts to the babe in the manger. They invented the art of giving Christmas presents. Being wise, their gifts were no doubt wise ones, possibly bearing the privilege of exchange in case of duplication. And here I have lamely related to you the uneventful chronicle of two foolish children in a flat who most unwisely sacrificed for each other the greatest treasures of their house. But in a last word to the wise of these days, let it be said that of all who give gifts, these two were the wisest. Of all who give and receive gifts, such as they are wisest. Everywhere, they are wisest. They are the Magi. The Gift of the Magi by O. Henry. First time reading it this morning, and yeah, apparently it's a classic. Who knew? I'm going to spin another tune, and then I am going to read one more little fairy tale. And happy holidays, everybody.
It began to rain the moment we took shelter. And the western sun was fighting for the sky. Our bodies weren't big enough. Our bodies weren't big enough for all the hope that we had.
That was Fire Horse, Our Hearts. Love their music. All right, so if you're just joining us, Simone here, and I'm doing some live pre-recorded, meaning I am pre-recording due to the winter storm a couple of stories, but I am not editing, or if I make a mistake, there it exists, and I just start over from the beginning of the line that I messed up. So the next story is by Hans Christian Andersen, The Fir Tree, which also I have never read, and this is my first time, and let's give it a go. Far away in the forest, where the warm sun and the fresh air made a sweet resting place, grew a pretty little fir tree. The situation was all that could be desired, and yet the tree was not happy. It wished so much to be like its tall companions, the pines and firs which grew around it. The sun shone, and the soft air fluttered its leaves, and the little peasant children passed by, prattling merrily, but the fir tree did not heed them. Sometimes the children would bring a large basket of raspberries or strawberries, wreathed on straws, and seat themselves near the fir tree and say, "Is it not a pretty little tree?" which made it feel even more unhappy than before. And yet all this while the tree grew a notch or joint taller every year, for by the number of joints in the stem of a fir tree we can discover its age. Still, as it grew, it complained. "Oh, how I wish I were as tall as the other trees! Then I would spread out my branches on every side, and my crown would overlook the wide world around. I should have the birds building their nests on my boughs, and when the wind blew, I should bow with stately dignity, like my tall companions." So discontented was the tree that it took no pleasure in the warm sunshine, the birds, or the rosy clouds that floated over it morning and evening. Sometimes in winter, when the snow lay white and glittering on the ground, there was a little hare that would come springing along and jump right over the little tree's head. Then how mortified it would feel. Two winters passed, and when the third arrived, the tree had grown so tall that the hare was obliged to run around it. Yet it remained unsatisfied and would exclaim, "Oh, to grow, to grow! If I could but keep on growing tall and old! There is nothing else worth caring for in the world." In the autumn, the woodcutters came, as usual, and cut down several of the tallest trees, and the young fir, which was now grown to a good full height, shuddered as the noble trees fell to the earth with a crash. After the branches were lopped off, the trunks looked so slender and bare that they could scarcely be recognized. Then they were placed, one upon another, upon wagons and drawn by horses out of the forest. Where could they be going? What would become of them? The young fir tree wished very much to know. So in the spring, when the swallows and the storks came, it asked, "Do you know where those trees were taken? Did you meet them?" The swallows knew nothing, but the stork, after a little reflection, nodded his head and said, "Yes, I think I do. As I flew from Egypt, I met several new ships, and they had fine masts and smelt like fir. These must have been the trees, and I assure you they were stately. They sailed right gloriously. Oh, how I wish I were tall enough to go on the sea," said the fir tree. "Tell me, what is the sea, and what does it look like?"
"It would take too much time to explain. A great deal too much," said the stork, flying quickly away.
"Rejoice in thy youth," said the sunbeam. "Rejoice in thy fresh growth and in the young life that is in thee." And the wind kissed the tree, and the dew watered it with tears, but the fir tree regarded them not. Little sip of water. Remember, I'm recording this, pre-recording it, but treating it as if it were live. Christmas time drew near, and many young trees were cut down, some that were even smaller and younger than the fir tree, who enjoyed neither rest nor peace for longing to leave its forest home. These young trees, which were chosen for their beauty, kept their branches, and they also were laid on wagons and drawn by horses far away out of the forest. "Where are they going?" asks the fir tree. "They are not taller than I am. Indeed, one is not so tall. And why do they keep all their branches? Where are they going?" We know, sang the sparrows. "We have looked in at the windows of the houses in the town, and we know what is done with them. Oh, you cannot think what honor and glory they receive. They are dressed up in the most splendid manner. Oh, we have seen them standing in the middle of a warm room and adorned with all sorts of beautiful things. Honey cakes, gilded apples, playthings, and many hundreds of wax tapers." "And then?" asked the fir tree, trembling in all its branches. "And then what happens?" "We did not see any more," said the sparrows. "But this was enough for us." "I wonder whether anything so brilliant will ever happen to me," thought the fir tree. "It would be better even than crossing the sea. I long for it almost with pain. Oh, when will Christmas be here? I am now as tall and well-grown as those which were taken away last year. Oh, that I were now laid on the wagon or standing in the warm room with all that brightness and splendor around me. Something better and more beautiful is to come after, or the trees would not be so decked out. Yes, what follows will be grander and more splendid. What can it be? Oh, I am weary with longing. I scarcely know what it is that I feel. Rejoice in our love," said the air and the sunlight. "Enjoy thine own bright life in the fresh air." But the tree would not rejoice. Though it grew taller every day, and winter and summer its dark green foliage might be seen in the forest, while passers-by would say, "What a beautiful tree!" A short time before the next Christmas, the discontented fir tree was the first to fall. As the axe cut sharply through the stem and divided the pith, the tree fell with a groan to the earth, conscious of pain and faintness, and forgetting all its dreams of happiness and sorrow at leaving its home in the forest. It knew that it should never again see its dear old companions, the trees, nor the little bushes and many colored flowers that had grown by its side, perhaps not even the birds. Nor was the journey at all pleasant. The tree first recovered itself while being unpacked in the courtyard of a house with several other trees, and it heard a man say, "We only want one, and this, oh, is the prettiest. This is beautiful." Then came two servants in grand livery and carried the fir tree into a large and beautiful apartment. Pictures hung on the walls, and near the tall tile stove stood great china vases with lions on the lids. There were rocking chairs, silken sofas, and large tables covered with pictures. And there were books and playthings that had cost 100 times $100, at least so said the children. Then the fir tree was placed in a large tub full of sand, but green baize hung all around it so that no one could know it was a tub, and it stood on a very handsome carpet. Oh, how the fir tree trembled! What was going to happen to him now? Some young ladies came, and the servants helped them to adorn the tree. On one branch they hung little bags cut out of colored paper, and each bag was filled with sweetmeats. From other branches hung gilded apples and walnuts, as if they had grown there, which were fastened upon the branches. Dolls, exactly like real men and women, were placed under the green leaves. The tree had never seen such things before. And at the very top was fastened a glittering star made of gold tinsel. Oh, it was very beautiful. "This evening," they all exclaimed, "how bright it will be!" "Oh, that the evening were come," thought the tree, "and the tapers lighted. Then I shall know what else is going to happen. Will the trees of the forest come to see me? Will the sparrows peep in at the windows, I wonder, as they fly? Shall I grow faster here than in the forest? And shall I keep on all these ornaments during summer and winter?" But guessing was of very little use. His back ached with trying, and this pain is as bad for a slender fir tree as headaches is for us. At last the tapers were lighted, and then what a glistening blaze of splendor the tree presented! It trembled so with joy in all its branches that one of the candles fell among the green leaves and burned some of them. "Help! Help!" exclaimed the young ladies, but no harm was done, for they quickly extinguished the fire. After this, the tree tried not to tremble at all. Though the fire frightened him, he was so anxious not to hurt any of the beautiful ornaments, even while their brilliancy dazzled him. And now the folding doors were thrown open, and a troop of children rushed in as if they intended to upset the tree, and were followed more slowly by their elders. For a moment, the little ones stood silent with astonishment, and then they shouted for joy till the room rang, and they danced merrily round the tree while one present after another was taken from it. "What are they doing? What will happen next?" thought the tree. At last the candles burned down to the branches and were put out. Then the children received permission to plunder the tree. Oh, how they rushed upon it! There was such a riot that the branches cracked, and had it not been fastened with the glistening star to the ceiling, it must have been thrown down. Then the children danced about them with their pretty toys, and no one noticed the tree except the children's maid, who came and peeped among the branches to see if an apple or a fig had been forgotten. "A story, a story!" cried the children, pulling a little fat man towards the tree. "Now, we shall be in the green shade," said the man as he seated himself under it, "and the tree will have the pleasure of hearing also, but I shall only relate one story. What shall it be? Evita Aveda or Humpty Dumpty, who fell downstairs but soon got up again and at last married a princess?" "Evita Aveda," cried some. "Humpty Dumpty," cried others, and there was a famous uproar. But the fir tree remained quite still and thought to himself, "Shall I have anything to do with all this? Ought I to make a noise, too?" But he had already amused them as much as they wished, and they paid no attention to him. Then the old man told them the story of Humpty Dumpty, how he fell downstairs and was raised up again and married a princess. And the children clapped their hands and cried, "Tell another, tell another," for they wanted to hear the story of Evita Aveda. Not sure if I'm getting that right. Evita Aveda. But this time, they had only Humpty Dumpty. After this, the fir tree became quite silent and thoughtful. Never had the birds in the forest told such tales as that of Humpty Dumpty, who fell downstairs and yet married a princess. Ah, yes, so it happens in the world, thought the fir tree. He believed it all because it was related by such a pleasant man. Ah, well, he thought, who knows, perhaps I may fall down too and marry a princess. And he looked forward joyfully to the next evening, expecting to be again decked out with lights and playthings, gold and fruit. Tomorrow I will not tremble, thought he. I will enjoy all my splendor, and I shall hear the story of Humpty Dumpty again, and perhaps of Vita Veda. And the tree remained quiet and thoughtful all night. In the morning, the servants and the housemaid came in. Now, thought the fir tree, all my splendor is going to begin again. But they dragged him out of the room and upstairs to the garret and threw him on the floor into a dark corner where no daylight shone. And there they left him. What does this mean? Thought the tree. What am I to do here? I can hear nothing in a place like this. And he leaned against the wall and thought and thought. He had time enough to think, for days and nights passed, and no one came near him. And when at last somebody did come, it was only to push away some large boxes in a corner. So the tree was completely hidden from sight, as if it had never existed. It is winter now, thought the tree. The ground is hard and covered with snow, so that people cannot plant me. I shall be sheltered here, I dare say, until spring comes. How thoughtful and kind everybody is to me. Still, I wish this place were not so dark and so dreadfully lonely, with not even a little hare to look at. How pleasant it was out in the forest, while the snow lay on the ground, when the hare would run by, yes, and jump over me, too, although I did not like it then. Oh, it is terribly lonely here. Squeak, squeak, said a little mouse, creeping cautiously towards the tree. And then came another, and they both sniffed at the fir tree and crept in and out between the branches. Oh, it is very cold, said the little mouse. If it were not, we should be very comfortable here, shouldn't we, old fir tree? I'm not old, said the fir tree. There are many who are older than I am. Where do you come from? Asked the mice, who were full of curiosity. And what do you know? Have you seen the most beautiful places in the world? And can you tell us all about them? And have you been in the storeroom, where cheeses lie on the shelf and hams hang from the ceiling? Oh, one can run about on tallow candles there. One can go in thin and come out fat. I know nothing of that, said the fir tree. But I know the wood, where the sun shines and the birds sing. And then the tree told the little mice all about its youth. They had never heard such an account in their lives. And after they had listened to it attentively, they said, "What a number of things you have seen! You must have been very happy." "Happy," exclaimed the fir tree. And then, as he reflected on what he had been telling them, he said, "Yes, after all, those were happy days." But when he went on and related all about Christmas Eve, and how he had been dressed up with cakes and lights, the mice said, "Oh, how happy you must have been, you old fir tree." "I am not old at all," replied the tree. "I only came from the forest this winter. I am now checked in my growth." "What splendid stories you can tell," said the little mice. And the next night, four other mice came with them to hear what the tree had to tell. The more he talked, the more he remembered. And then he thought to himself, "Yes, those were happy days, but they may come again. Humpty Dumpty fell downstairs, and yet he married the princess. Perhaps I may marry a princess, too." And the fir tree thought of the pretty little birch tree that grew in the forest. A real princess, a beautiful princess she was to him. "Who is Humpty Dumpty?" said the little mice. And then the tree related the whole story. He could remember every single word. And the little mice were so delighted with it that they were ready to jump to the top of the tree. The next night, a great many more mice made their appearance. And on Sunday, two rats came with them. But the rats said it was not a pretty story at all, And the little mice were very sorry, for it made them also think less of it. "Do you only know that one story?" asked the rats. "Only that one," replied the fir tree. "I heard it on the happiest evening in my life, but I did not know I was so happy at the time." "We think it is a very miserable story," said the rats. "Don't you know any story about bacon or tallow in the storeroom?" "No," replied the tree. "Many thanks to you, then," replied the rats, and they went their ways. The little mice also kept away after this, and the tree sighed and said, "It was pleasant when the merry little mice sat around me and listened while I talked. Now that is all past, too. However, I shall consider myself happy when someone comes to take me out of this place." But would this ever happen? Yes, one morning people came to clear up the garret. The boxes were packed away, and the tree was pulled out of the corner and thrown roughly on the floor. Then the servants dragged it out upon the staircase where the daylight shone. "Now life is beginning again," said the tree, rejoicing in the sunshine and fresh air. Then it was carried downstairs and taken into the courtyard so quickly that it forgot to think of itself and could only look about. There was so much to be seen. The court was close to a garden where everything looked blooming. Fresh and fragrant roses hung from the little palings. The linden trees were in blossom, while swallows flew here and there, crying, "Twit, twit, twit, my mate is coming." But it was not the fir tree they meant. "Now I shall live," cried the tree joyfully, spreading out its branches. But alas, they were all withered and yellow, and it lay in a corner among weeds and nettles. The star of gold paper still stuck in the top of the tree and glittered in the sunshine. Two of the merry children who had danced around the tree at Christmas and had been so happy were playing in the same courtyard. The youngest saw the gilded star and ran and pulled it off the tree. "Look what is sticking to the ugly old fir tree," said the child, treading on the branches till they crackled under his boots. And the tree saw all the fresh, bright flowers in the garden, and then looked at itself and wished it had remained in the dark corner of the garret. It thought of its fresh youth in the forest, of the merry Christmas evening, and of the little mice who had listened to the story of Humpty Dumpty. "Past, past," said the poor tree. "Oh, had I but enjoyed myself while I could have done so. But now it is too late." Then a lad came and chopped the tree into small pieces, till a large bundle lay in a heap on the ground. The pieces were placed in a fire, and they quickly blazed up brightly, while the tree sighed so deeply that each sigh was like a little pistol shot. Then the children who were at play came and seated themselves in front of the fire and looked at it and cried, "Pop, pop!" But at each pop was a deep sigh. The tree was thinking of a summer day in the forest, or of some winter night there where the stars shone brightly, and of Christmas evening, and of Humpty Dumpty, the only story it had ever heard or knew how to relate, till at last it was consumed. The boy still played in the garden, and the youngest wore on his breast the golden star with which the tree had been adorned during the happiest evening of its existence. Now all was past. The tree's life was past, and the story also past, for all stories must come to an end at some time or other. The end.